Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. This is Egberto Willis, your host. We are calling in from Kingwood, Texas. Today, what are we going to discuss? Well, we are going to be discussing, what else are we going to discuss but the war in Iraq? But you know what? Something interesting happened today, and or not today, but this week. It had to do with Joe Scarborough and the minimum wage. So we're going to talk about that all a while. But think about it, folks. Is this deja vu all over again? Well, folks, it seems like we had a backdrop on Blog Talk Radio a few minutes ago. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but we're here with you now. What are we going to talk about today? We are going to be talking about Iraq, of course, because it seems like deja vu all over again. Now, there's a lot of blame to go around, but you sit down and you wonder, why again? Why again? But anyway, let's go ahead and get started. You know, the big story. The big story this week is our reentry into Iraq. Did the president do the right thing? Is it only America's responsibility to police the world? That's a question. Should other countries that depend more on the oil from that region be more engaged? Another question. Those are questions that must be answered. The burden of war seemed to be placed more on Americans than anyone else, but is it our leaders' continual intervention that makes that our reality? Think about it, folks. Is that Are we making that our reality? It's a question. But before we get into Iraq, I want to talk about the minimum wage debate. This week, an unlikely person weighed in with a welcomed position. Joe Scarborough finally owned up to reality. He finally owned up to reality. Typo in my text. What are your thoughts? I will also be following our hashtag politics done right. So if you want to say something, the hashtag is politics done right. So let's get into the reading of the blog post. This one is actually not going to be, this is actually the one that I want to start with. I think I want to go ahead and start with the Joe Scarborough thing here. And I'm going to try to play it a bit, see if that'll work. But again, like I said, we've been having a bit of technical difficulties, but let's try that.
A really interesting talk that is coming out of Minnesota, where a restaurant there is coming under fire for the way that it's protesting the minimum wage hike there. The new minimum wage went up by 75 cents, so Oasis Cafe in Stillwater has started slapping a 35 cent minimum wage fee on all the customer tabs, and they put it right there on your bill.
Listen, these small business owners running we all know the bad things that have done these. It's hard to do, and you know, I understand the difficulty of any extra burden. But now, the minimum wage is low historically as it is. You may not want to advertise your contempt for raising it a little bit on the bill.
There you have it, folks. There you have it. Is Joe Scarborough getting soft? Is he moving to the middle? Last week, Joe Scarborough took that rear position. I mean, think about it, folks. This is pretty serious. This is pretty serious. Look, Joe Scarborough, rear position. Bold politicians on the left and the right were going out of their way to put a good face on Israel's action in Gaza. This week, however, Joe Scarborough took a position on the minimum wage based on reality as opposed to his typical Ayn Randian ideology. It's Minnesota gave him the opportunity to weigh in. The owner of the Oasis started adding a 35-cent surcharge to every bill, supposedly to offset the 75-cent minimum wage hike. The idiocy of this move is that he likely does not add a surcharge when his rent, his utilities, cooking oil, and other items go up in price. He likely sees those as costs of doing business. Craig Beamer chose to exercise his protest on his employees and not on a system that increases cost on all. That is inhumane and shows a lack of understanding. It displays suspect morality. Joe Scarborough started by acknowledging the difficulty of small business owners. He had to get that pre-defense in, a defense that is true for a few small businesses. He then acknowledged that the only area that has been stagnant, in fact, is in fact the minimum wage. The minimum wage, as low historically as it is, Joe Scarborough said, he may not want to advertise your contempt for raising it a little bit on the bill. Many spend an inordinate amount of time complaining about those that are very rigid in their positions in such a manner that compromise is impossible. Too many of those that are rigid in their beliefs or ideology find that there is no upside for compromise. Having conviction in one's ideology does not mean that compromise is impossible if one realizes that we are all wired differently. Those that bridge the divide must be rewarded for taking that step. Only then will many that are rigid today see an upside in taking a leap. So that is the reason I'm giving Joe Scarborough the kudos for today. I mean, the guy has actually been moderating himself. And you know what? I'm not asking folks to change their ideology or whatever. I'm asking folks to try to get along. I'm asking folks to try to find a way to compromise. I'm asking folks that, or telling folks that the only way you can move forward is to move forward. And the only way to move forward, again, is for folks to give and take. Because as you can see, what's happening in the country right now is just a stagnation caused by intransigence, and that intransigence, we know where it lies. So hopefully, kinds of stances being taken by the Joe Scarboroughs of the world will actually start, infecting others positively in such a manner that they feel they want to get something done. Well, I'm going to go to the phones, and then we'll jump into Iraq or whatever else you want to talk about. But let's get busy. I think 620-620, who do I have the honor of speaking with? This seems like Jack, right?
Okay, this is Jack Golden, yes. And
talk to me, Jack.
The idea of, I might go into Iraq. Maybe we want to talk about why the heck we're in Iraq in the first place. And there's two reasons. And one of them is that we had to listen to the two Pauls. That's what happened. Paul Bremer, Wolfowitz and Paul Bremer. And then because of that, we debathification of the Iraqi army. And that produced a void in there. There may be a problem in Syria, too. We didn't get Assad. But I think what you got to do is... And that came up with ISIS. It wants a caliphate. It wants extremism. I am opposed to extremism
right.
of all kinds, whether it be Sharia law, which is extreme, or what's happening with the Tea Party. They're both extremists.
Let me ask you this. Did the president make the right move or did he not make the right move? What do you think?
I think he was a little too timid, particularly getting the people off the mountain. And they're stuck in there for the last 3 days or so. And I don't know what the heck to do. But I think he did it without having to troops on the ground. They could have one of the planes strafe these bastards, I like to excuse that expression, just kill them off and let the people go, the 40,000 odd Christians and as it carries or whatever you call them, and free them.
The Yazidis.
Yazidis. I can't remember the name. But I think we should... They're a sect that's worse than Al Qaeda. Now we had his last name was Daddy. Daddy was part of his last name. He was freed from Guantanamo, and he is the head of ISIS, hidden in plain sight. Why we
right.
let them go, and they were recruiting Americans and Europeans to fight on the side of ISIS. That's what we have to worry about. And they may have hundreds of them suckers that believe in that in extremism or maybe just to make a fortune in shooting people. I think that we have to investigate that. And,
okay, Joe.
Americans and Europeans.
John, I hear you. Let me see what John thinks about it. John, what do you think? Did the president make the right decision? First of all, before we get into Iraq, I was really
it's
trying
a little
to
too
get into
timid.
Iraq. Yeah, okay. I want to get into before I get into Iraq, I want to ask John about the minimum wage, how several of our friends are starting to maybe see the light.
Yeah, it's obviously a good thing, but I guess I just don't take too much I don't think it's really that big of a deal. I mean, I think O'Reilly has already said that he thinks that the minimum wage should be raised. you know, the problem is that, you know, do the actual Republican politicians want to do it? And they're going against 70% of the American public who do want to raise the minimum wage to 10-10. And so, so I mean, that's the big issue. This is coming back to what you were talking about on KPFT on Monday when you were talking about Elizabeth Warren and talking about all the student debt that is owed, and you were talking about the, you know, the reasons why all of this student debt is owed, and it's there for similar reasons to why we can't have infrastructure, why we can't have jobs. And the reason is that we do not tax the upper class the way we used to during our years of prosperity, with the greatest years were 1950 to 1970. Once those taxes started going down, all
right.
of a sudden, everybody, all the Republicans, all they talk about is how are we going to pay for this? And they also are talking, always trying to back up their money backers who basically say, you know, we don't want to share the wealth. And so it all comes back to that. And so that's very important. As far as al-Baghdadi that Jack was talking about, he was never in Guantanamo. He was held in Camp Buka, which was in Iraq. But, I mean, obviously, yes, we shouldn't have let him go. As far as the other Iraq situation, I guess the question you were asking is, did Obama make the right decision?
Right.
And, and I think he actually did. I think that, it's kind of befuddling to me to see, you know, most of the people on the left, and I was one of them, and obviously you were very, very concerned about what was happening in Gaza and how the Israelis, how they were, killing, thousands of Gazans. But
Palestinians,
we
yeah.
don't, right, but I mean, we don't feel the same sympathy towards the people that are being taken over by ISIS. And so, I think there are lots of reasons for that. One of the reasons is, when you're a marauding army and you take over a city or portions of a country, you don't have footage coming out showing the carnage.
Exactly.
And
right.
so, you don't see all of that. And so I think that's a lot of it. But, I mean, people really do have to use their imaginations and think about how bad things are in Mosul, how bad things are in Tikrit, how bad things are in Fallujah, how bad things are in Ramadi, how bad things are in Samarra, who are all, in all of these cities that ISIS, holds right now. I mean, there's fighting right now in Tikrit and Ramadi. This is really something that, I'm kind of torn over. And I think a lot of people on the left are torn because they don't want to see mission creep come up. And we have continually, Obama, even this morning, when he had his press conference, he was addressing the fact that we're not going to have boots on the ground. And, the hope that I hear from everybody is that somehow the Kurdish army and the Iraqi army are going to be able to, hold their own and take back this force. I'm not sure how realistic that is. I mean, there are a lot of people who say that.
I am not. Let me tell you something. I am, and 313, I'm coming to you next. I am really appalled by how guys in a pickup truck with a gun attached to it, welded onto its base, no heavy artillery or anything like that, can be a threat to an army with tanks. it just befuddles me, and I cannot believe that there isn't more to this story that we don't know. Because think about it. These are a whole lot of folks running around in pickup trucks with guns attached and taking over big swaths of land. That doesn't compute to me. I am not saying that it's not happening. I just don't understand how something like that can happen. But keep tight with me, John. I'm keeping you hot. And 313, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, Brody. 313, you're on.
Hey,
how
you Brody. Doing, my friend?
Yeah, not bad. How you doing?
So far, so good. Talk to me, my friend.
Let's start out with the minimum wage. And I made a little bit of post after, especially after I watched or I looked at your blog post today. And my feeling is, and I just started a small business. I'm a one-man operation, but I have no problem with with the increase in the minimum wage because that is going to benefit me. It's going to benefit that restaurant owner that is making that surcharge, and that surcharge is nothing but a political statement. Like Scarborough
exactly.
said, he could have just as easily, you know, put that into his, into his prices. But he is going to see an increase, or that person, I'm not sure if it's a he or she, is going to see an increase in traffic into their restaurant because people are going to have more money in their wallets, you know, to come to that restaurant. And if people can't look, employers cannot look past past what the initial cost is that to them, and look a little bit into the future, and see that you know what this is going to help me economically. I mean, that's their problem. This restaurant is trying to make a political statement, and that's really all there is to it.
I want to interrupt you 1 second here, and because I wanted to go a bit on a soapbox, and I had to hurry up and finish that blog post today because I had to come and prepare for the radio show and all of that. So, including I had a couple of typos I had to fix, and there's still a couple of typos I see that needs fixing, but I wanted to get the message out. But here's the deal. Every year, right, you sign your contract for electricity, it goes up. It's a private company that's providing that electricity. You go buy the oil for your burners, the oil price is up. You go ahead and you sign your new lease for rent, the price is up. Yeah, you increase your prices a little bit to cover those increased costs. You've never seen these guys try to create a protest when another private company increases their cost. But now, the real thing that you have control over is what you pay your employees, right? Or how often you sweep your floors or whatever. And now, the one thing that you're going to try to show your bravado with is increasing the standard of living of those who work for you, those who make your business prosperous, those who make the money for you. You're going to create a, and that's why in the post that I wrote, there's a thing that I thought twice about saying, then I said, no, I have to say this, where I said, that is inhumane and shows a lack of understanding. It displays suspect morality because they didn't look at it as a problem when they're getting these other increases in prices. Yes, they complain, but they don't sit down and create that stance. I don't want to increase the living standard of my employees because the government tells me I have to, and to keep society going, that is a must. There's something suspect in the minds of these people when they think like that. Mike? Go ahead.
Yeah. What it comes down to is just purely, I'm sorry, but it's just short-term greed. That greed crosses a lot of different parts of our society right now. Everything from the business area to the religious sectors, and it's not until we get rid of that part. People cannot just concentrate on the financial bottom line. If they really love and support this country, they have to look at the well-being of everybody. And that's the way businesses ran, you know, not all businesses, but a lot of businesses ran back, you know, in the 60s and 70s. They supported Little League teams. Yeah, they probably still do. But I grew up in a small town. My father ran a very small department store, but yet out of the very little bit of profits that he got, he supported Little League teams, and he supported community activities. And it came out of his wallet, you know, to do so. Is it good PR? Sure. But it, you know, but it also was the fact, it also was a part of feeling like a business is a part of a community, and the community in this case is the United States.
Absolutely. You have to feel yourself a part of the community. And it, to give, if it, that's your team. What around back in the days of the election, you know, the takers. Right now, I'm sorry, but a lot of our businesses, that's all they're doing. They're takers. They want to take. They want the military there to support them in these foreign lands when they get into trouble, but they want to stay and keep their monies in these foreign lands so they don't have to pay the American taxes to the government, who has to come to their rescue when they're in trouble. I mean, who are really the takers again? It is not too hard to figure that out. And, you know, I think it's important for us, just as you said there, to name it, to name that the reality is, a lot of the takers are not, in fact, those. You know, it was funny because last week I had Maureen Taylor, who is an activist in Detroit, on my Move Women Reports show on Blog Talk Radio back on Thursday, and you know, she had a thing that she said. She said, you know, all these guys that are calling folks takers, right, are actually extracting all this money out of the community. They have this emergency director or emergency manager in Detroit. His name is Orr. I don't remember his first name, but his last name is Orr. This guy's making $8,000 an hour. $8,000 an hour. And then she says, and think about this, a family in Detroit on welfare makes $5,000 a year. What a disparity. You know, not that you want to live on welfare, but I mean, they complain about these folks that are on welfare going through a hard time, not for the rest of their lives. These are folks going through a hard time because of the decline in manufacturing in Detroit. They don't want them to. They don't want to give them a ladder, a step up to get back into the middle class. But they have no problem paying this guy $8,000 an hour to do very little, actually, to simply liquidate a lot of what all these taxpayers have bought. Somebody wanted to get in.
I was just in Detroit. Of course, I don't live very far from Detroit, but I was in Detroit a couple of weeks ago, I took a long walk down where Tiger Stadium used to be. But I was with another person that they had just finished with Netroots Nation, and we met.
I was
and
there
we
with
walked.
Nation.
You were out there?
I was at Netroots Nation.
Yeah.
In fact, I was in the march. I was in the rally, and I have all those pictures of the rallies and the videos of the rallies that we did and the speakers that came in from all over the country. It was great.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. I am really glad you got a chance to go there. I wish I could have afforded it myself. But I met with another person that we probably both know, that works for a company that supports one of our organizations. And we took a walk down Rosa Park Avenue, because I don't know how far into Detroit you got, but we got into the parts of where the houses were burnt down, into where the houses have been just collapsing. A lot of pictures. As a matter of fact, I'm asking her to send those pictures. My camera ran out. My battery ran out at that point. And she's going to send me the pictures. But we got a good, she got a good chance to see it, you know, in person, you know, what this devastation is. And there's
right.
a good, there's a very good documentary to watch called Requiem for Detroit. And if you haven't watched it, I highly recommend it. You can only get the trailers
called?
On YouTube. Requiem for Detroit with a question mark.
Okay.
I mean, a question mark after that. I highly that's something I think everybody should see. And it's described there as being a slow-motion Katrina. And that's exactly what it is. Because you go through these neighborhoods out there, and they're barren. And then there'll be a house. And then they'll in that house will be, or in these empty lots near that house, will be gardens growing, vegetable gardens. And there is a new, almost like a pioneer spirit happening in Detroit. If, as a matter of fact, if you want to get a job, the place to go to is Detroit right now. Because the rebuilding process, you know, the reconstruction process is just underway. Now, I know you were down at Cobo Hall, and I don't know how far out in Detroit you were able to get.
I didn't get a chance
you know,
to go
but,
far into Detroit. I spoke to a lot of the activists there, and a couple said, we need to take you over, but it was such a busy time between the panels and,
sure.
and then the protest that we did. So it was difficult, but what I did do is I made a whole lot of contacts, and like you said, I did get quite a few people that went out and got some pictures and so forth. But, you know, I've been following the Detroit story for a long time now, so I kind of
right.
had a feeling of what was going on there. Now, what company were you with? What organization was there taking pictures with you?
I was with Nation Builder.
Oh, great, great. I actually met some of the folks
yeah.
out there as well from Nation Builder, yeah.
So you met Jerry?
Absolutely, and not only him, but what's her name? I can't remember her name right now. In fact, we sat at the
yeah,
table
her,
together.
Her,
at
her name is... Yeah, her name is, well, the person I'm talking about is Jerry, J-E-R-I. And,
right.
And she works directly with us on Coffee Party.
Right.
And I met her in a restaurant just a couple blocks down from where Tiger Stadium used to be on Michigan and Trumbull. And,
right.
And we took a walk after we met. We talked for several hours, and we took a walk around the, you know, into some of the areas. And now the areas that we actually went into are nothing compared to some of the worst areas that are out there. But
right.
you would see painted on every overpass is "Don't turn off the water." And, of course, the water
right.
situation there where they are turning off the water to people who can't pay their bills has become an international, you know, controversy. As a matter of fact, the UN just weighed in on it here. I don't know if it was today or yesterday.
Yes, I wrote about that, actually. I tell you what, I bet a lot of that water issue, too, has a lot to do with those gardens. It would not surprise me at all that these guys becoming self-sufficient and actually using those empty lots to actually do something with, that doesn't sit well with the plutocrats at all, you know? So you can imagine that
exactly.
all of that is a part of the issue.
And that is part of the issue. And there's right now there's a controversy of who is going to take over, you know, who is going to control how Detroit is rebuilt. And there's a lot of communities, small communities that are in Detroit that are not organized. And that's one of the things that we're looking to do is get these smaller communities organized so they have a voice in rebuilding Detroit.
And that is what it's all about. Anyway, we want to go ahead and, you know, we kind of got onto the Detroit thing. Let's kind of move it back now into Iraq. You know, that kind of had a feeling for the minimum wage and how the middle class is being torn down by, you know, whom. Now, what do you think about Iraq?
Well, of course, I'm a vet, and I got, you know, and I have a lot of interest in it and in what's going on in Iraq. But being in Iraq, of course, this is my opinion, but going into Iraq was a mistake in the first place. Now, the only thing that we could ever possibly do if we put boots on the ground would be putting our finger in the dike. And at some point, you have to pull your finger out of the dike. And we did. And now that we have done that, I don't think that there are too many people, and especially too many vets, vets that were in Iraq, that are surprised to see what happened. Now, here is another recommendation. And that is Frontline had, you can watch this right now if you want. If you go to Frontline or PBS.org Frontline, and there's a 1.5-hour documentary called Losing Iraq. And it is very much well worth watching.
I think
you want to find out.
Think I haven't listened to it yet, but I see your point, Mike. But here's the interesting thing. What John had to say, I think, is also important, and that is, we don't want to be in Iraq, but if there's, and you notice how carefully the president used the word genocide. He said acts of genocide instead of just outright genocide. The question is, if genocide is occurring as ISIS is doing, or ISIS or ISIL, whichever one you want to use, whether or not it is our responsibility, or if it's our moral responsibility to go in and defend these guys. John, why don't you kind of make your case here a bit?
Well, again, you know, I'm fairly torn about this. I mean, and part of it also goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the economic situation here in America, because all of a sudden, and you were talking about this last week, you know, where they gave, I think, what was it, $225 billion to have money
to secure
the Iron Dome in Israel. Right. But one thing that I think you were not really correct about is that they didn't pay for that. In fact, Tom Coburn was going to block the bill, and McCain and Lindsey Graham went to him and said, we believe this, but this is Israel, and you can't do this. And basically, he put down his hold, and they voted on it. And so it wasn't paid for. That was just added to the debt. But, I mean, not that I'm a –
Also,
know,
was
I'm
not
definitely,
paid for.
It was not paid for.
Well, I stand corrected, because from what I had read, they had the offsets, but you're telling me I'm wrong, so I need to correct that.
Right, yeah, you can go to there's an article on The Hill that talks about that, how Lindsey Graham and McCain went to them and convinced Coburn to vote that way. So anyway.
So they'll tack onto the debt, but they can't tack $30 million onto the deck for unemployment compensation for 5 months. That's a shame.
Right. Or to help people fight fires in Washington State and Oregon and Northern California. So, I mean, that's part of the problem is, you know, we're going to be spending, you know, a lot of money because, I mean, Obama even said this morning, you know, this, you know, in a minimum is going to take months. And, you know, how are we going to, I mean, obviously, I mean, we're able to do this because, I mean, to me, you know, this is just the whole idea of the debt is more of a phony crisis, and we've talked about this for years. But, I mean, you know, this is the mantra that the Republicans use, though. They have this. And unfortunately, one of the biggest problems in America is that people don't know basic macroeconomic theory. And so they can fall for this false narrative of people saying that we can't pay for anything because of the debt. And so, but, I mean, we are able to pay for the Iron Dome, and we are going to be able to pay, you know, for bombing the people, bombing, you know, ISIS. But, I mean, at the same time, you know, ISIS is a huge problem. And I'm not really sure where you're going with this idea about, you know, about ISIS and how you think that there's more to the story than the gist that they're, you know, basically they're well equipped. They have, I think, in both Syria and Iraq, they have, you know, they have larger forces than the people that they're. I mean, I know in Crete, a lot of the Iraqi army just, you know, went away. But I think a lot of it was because they saw superior forces, and that's also happened in some of the Kurdish areas that they've already taken over. I mean, they see these overwhelming forces, and I know you're saying, well, how can they have overwhelming forces when their total force is only 7,000 to 10,000 people? But it's all relative to the people fighting. You know, if you have, you know, 500 people versus, you know, 100 people in the Iraqi army, I mean, a lot of, you know, it's very hard, I mean, to go against those odds, and so it's really the best tactically to retreat. And so I understand your questioning of this to a degree, but I don't think that there's really any more to it. I don't think that there's some kind of false information coming out. I just think that they have this kind of demented kind of philosophy of the world, and that's what they're putting into place. And I think that they really believe that this is going to come into place. And yeah, they really do have to be stopped. And I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, try to see the reports that are real and not real. Like, there was a report on Daily Kos yesterday that people, it was on the recommended list, that a lot of people, the Kurds already formed a unit for people to get out of the mountain area. Well, I didn't see that on any other sites at all. And so, but now I'm seeing on Al Jazeera that they're saying the same thing a day later. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to know what is the real information and what is not what's not real.
Yeah, you know, but what concerns me, though, as well, John, if you take a look at the way it's reporting, right, anytime we're about to engage in the world, we try to hit a particular set of buttons. If you listen to CNN today, you hear about these warriors that are killing Christians, okay? I'm not saying it's not true or whatever. But it always seems like whenever we're about to go into some place, it is somebody that is really doing an egregious act on Christians or Americans or something like that. I can name you probably off the top of my head 5 countries in the world right now that is occurring. I am not trying to be insensitive to the plight of the Yazidis at all. I really am not. My concern is, and I think it was a question that I added to the vlog for the show, is right now the oil that's coming from Iraq and other countries in the Middle East mostly go to Europe and other countries. But still, we engage. We cannot rebuild our infrastructure. You go to China. China is rebuilding its infrastructure so much so that they have empty cities. They're doing so much with infrastructure that they have whole cities that are built with nobody living in them. We have Europe that is way ahead of us in green energy and using their monies to invest in infrastructure, and we're investing our monies in bombs. In other words, transferring our wealth to the military-industrial complex. There's not a war these guys don't like. They love replenishing Iron Dome. They love having to replenish the bombs that Obama has to drop on ISIS right now. I mean, it's a zero-sum game for these guys. What about the other countries that are dependent on Iraq? Why aren't they more engaged? Why isn't the French Air Force, the German Air Force, the Turkish Air Force and all these guys, who ISIS is a clear and present danger for them. In fact, if ISIS were to take over northern Iraq, Turkey is right around the corner, isn't it? So the question is, why are these other guys just as concerned and just as engaged and just as worried as the President of the United States? It gives me great pause.
Well, I think that's already happening. I mean, right now, Cameron just said that he was going to be adding to the humanitarian. He's actually going to be, you know, giving the food and the water to the people up on the mountain. And the people on the mountain are already being taken away, like I said earlier. So, I mean, that's really good. And so the other people, I mean, you know, I think that, you know, this is just happening. I mean, you know, just before Obama, you know, had his press conference on Thursday, you know, 8:30 Central Time, you know, nobody was sure whether he was going to bomb or not. And so, you know, he made his announcement that you know, we were going to bomb, and essentially, you know, the response has been fairly muted compared to the response to Syria, and I think that is because of the humanitarian crisis. But again,
right.
I think everybody is concerned about, you know, what we can do to help these people without putting boots on the ground, and if that is even realistic, you know, because there's a lot of people, you know, military people who say this is not realistic at all. I mean, there's also a lot of people that point to the situation in Serbia that say, yeah, this is realistic. You know, essentially, you know, we bombed them and they did leave Kosovo. And so, I mean, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but this ISIS force is extreme.
Yeah, Kosovo should not be the example at all. Kosovo, you had people that that actually weren't as crazy as these people in ISIS. These people in ISIS are indoctrinated, apparently, from everything that I see, seem to be very indoctrinated in what they're doing. And not only that, the massive killings that it's purported that they are doing is nothing close to the quasi-genocide that occurred in Kosovo and near Serbia. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, it depends on if you're just looking at numbers of people killed.
Well, that's true.
Or what their intention is, you know, because, I mean, you had an ethnic war. I mean, because people, the Croatians committed genocide too, the Bosnians committed genocide. I mean, it was, you know, everybody, you know, there would one side would do mass killings and the other side would retaliate that way.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a really bad situation. And, I mean, we talked about that a month ago. And, you know, there are no easy answers. And I don't know. I don't know how this is going to ever, you know, come into place and how hopefully somehow these people are going to, you know, be convinced that this is just not something that is worthy of their time to try to form this.
Well, you know what is interesting? I am not a historian or a scholar in Middle Eastern history or anything like that. But from everything that I see, the first problem began with the unholy alliance created by Great Britain in the creation of Iraq, a country that is an artificial country, you know, with people that were never intended to get together. The second problem is for us to believe that in such a society, somehow a democracy would work, and that is what we were attempting to push. Not going to happen. And thirdly, now many wonder if what we're doing is simply something that we'll have to simply do going forward as long as we want to maintain a contiguous Iraq as a country. Is it just a status quo that we are going to have to run, which is for every head that gets popped up, swap it down, and that's it? But there will always be a problem that we just have to manage. It's like managing any disease that is, you know, a disease that won't necessarily kill you, but that you have to keep managed all the time. Is the American military power going to have to be used that way in Iraq? I mean, the military-industrial complex would love that. You know, they'll have a continuous flow of money necessary to continue to bomb these people every time they get out of line, and these people will always get out of line because it's an unholy alliance. And I mean, you sit down there and you have to wonder if we're willing to do that. Well, I guess we've done it before. We've been in South Korea for how many decades now? We've been in Golan Heights for how many decades now? So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
Can I interject something?
Sure, go ahead, Mike.
Okay, I'm sorry, John. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but several weeks ago, the president of Coffee Party asked, or I did an interview with them, and one of the questions was, you know, when ISIS and Levant were beginning to really, you know, show up as a problem in Iraq, they said, "What, you know, are we going to go back into Iraq?" And I said, "I highly doubt it. You know, first off, we've got a worn-out army, and secondly, the next thing I predicted, I says, if we do anything, is we will probably perform airstrikes to quell or at least slow down, the progress of ISIS. Now, there's a wild card here that we haven't talked about. And now that ISIS has encroached into Kurdish territory, that wild card is Iran. Iran does not like ISIS. And as if they start moving more easterly towards Iran, then you're going to see Iran probably take over as far as actually putting a boots on the ground fight against ISIS. So all we're doing with the airstrikes right now is slowing ISIS down, and hopefully, you know, we're able to. We've been actually dropping supplies on the mountain to the people that are up on the mountain, Christian or not, that are trying to escape from ISIS. But the other thing too, again, I think Iran is going to be the wild card, and that is going to be something that we're going to be looking at in the future is their involvement.
And you know, I think that's the reason we actually went in again, because I'm looking at the map right here, right now, right. And
right.
don't ever believe that Iran would not love to increase its. I mean, it's already in pretty much in cahoots with the Shias in Iraq. This gives them perfect reason to come in. And you know, if America were in Iran and you had an ISIS next door, I'm pretty sure we would be marching in. You know, and that is what. I think that is the reason why the president is maybe engaging, because you're correct. Arbil is the next city. Kirkuk is taken. Arbil is the next city. Arbil is right west of actual Iranian territory. I tell you what, wouldn't surprise me at all if they were to get and take Arbil, that we wouldn't see Iran say, to hell with it, we are in.
Well, we've already been in
John, what,
talks with
I'm
Iran.
I'm curious what John thinks about that.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
There's a blog up that actually that I was seeing by this guy is called Water Street 2008, and he put a blog up on Daily Kos this morning that was talking about Iran, and he actually made a statement. He says Iran already has two battalions of troops on the ground. Supports Asib al-Ahag, which is similar to the Hezbollah Allah in Lebanon/Syria, and is engaging ISIS raiders in daily battles. Now, when I saw that, I was thinking, "Wow, this is news. I haven't heard about this." And so I started doing a Google search, and nobody else is saying this. But I mean, what Mike is saying is a very good point. I mean, the first sentence of this blog is it says, as of Saturday, August 9th, both the United States and Iran are at war with ISIS. So I mean, this is, you know, I mean, there's always been strange bedfellows in war.
What an ally.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I don't think that that's particularly a bad thing. I think that ISIS
I agree with you there, John. I mean, there's a lot about Iran a lot of Americans don't quite understand or know. Iran is not the enemy we think Iran is.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not too fond of the mullahs, and you know, I think that when you have people that were protesting and for the Green Revolution a few years ago, those people are eventually going to gain power, and the sooner they gain power, the better, because they're going to be more open-minded, they're going to be more open to the West, and things are going to be a lot better there. But right now, we got to deal
John,
with the mullahs.
You're absolutely right, John. Hey, Mike, why don't you close out for me? Let me have our last words before we close the program down.
Okay. I mean, I agree with John. Iran is much more of a moderate, and agree with you that Iran is a much more moderate country than being portrayed. Yes, you know, there's a worry about nuclear weapons, but that set aside, we have been in talks with Iran as far as what can be done. I think the United States is doing probably what it said it's going to do and as much as it's going to do by performing airstrikes. But there are some things that you have to look into history, too, and it starts out with World War One and what happened after that and how Germany was devastated and not rebuilt. And I think that that's worth looking at, is what happens when you don't rebuild a country.
Thank you very much, Mike. Hey, Jack, give me a quick 15 seconds, Jack. I'm low on time.
Yeah, well, I think that, as I said before, when we talk about Israel and we talk about settlements, I'm against the settlements, and I'm against
I hear you, Jack.
Netanyahu's
I just
in
transit.
And I think
we'll talk
to free the Gaza, and maybe Hamas will cooperate. Who knows? Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. I really have to go. I'm hot. Hey, John, give me a quick 30 seconds, please.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of suffering a little bit from what they call crisis overload. everything, it's just amazing. This summer has been amazing. But, you know, as far as going back to the earlier point, you know, we do have elections coming up, and I think it's very important that people, you know, also remember that these elections are extremely important as far as infrastructure is concerned. And, you know, we should be thinking about the elections and give that a little time in our news cycle also.
Thank you very much, John. I got to go. But let me tell you, John, you're going to like my Daily Coast blog tomorrow. It's about the Texas election. I think you're going to like it. Now, folks, remember that Coffee Party has 3 radio shows right now. Hopefully another one coming shortly. On Mondays we have at 10 p.m. Eastern, we have Press One for Democracy with Dan Aronson. On Thursdays, we have Lunch with Loudon at 3 p.m. Eastern. And here on Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, you're here with me, Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. Look, folks, I really appreciate the time that you give me. I really appreciate the dialogue. I really appreciate my listeners. Please remember to go to coffeepartyusa.com. Be a member. We need you to actually continue getting the message out. And with that, I'll say to our good friend, Miss Loudon, Coffee Party.